At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And that's saying something from a man who is not prone to hyperbole. Andy Smith joins us now, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center, to talk about the politics of this. How you doing, Andy? Andy?
I'm doing well, but I liked your last line.
Well, I don't understand. What?
From a man not prone to a hyperbole.
Oh, is he? I didn't know. Let's talk about the politics of this, because the Democrats, the first thing I thought of was this. Democrats are jumping up, and Hakeem Jeffries and some Republicans, Rand Paul, if he's an independent, whatever he is these days, I don't know, are saying that this is going to be a killer, that he can't do this, they could try to stop him. I say, politically, if I'm the Democrats, or if I'm not a fan of President Trump, let him do what he wants. Let him stand or fall on his own merits, because, as he says, he has a mandate and the people voted for this and that's what they want. So if he indeed is going to make America great again, I have a soundbite where he says he's going to make America wealthy again. Give him a chance. If it doesn't work, it's on him. If it does work, then happy days are here again. Thoughts?
H.L. Mencken had a great quote that democracy is a system of government in which the common man knows what he wants and deserves to get it,
good and hard. Yep, there you go.
You're right. There's going to be political consequences. There are going to be economic consequences, and one follows from the other. The economic consequences are that things are going to be more expensive, and your 401k is going to be worth less, at least for the short term. Now, but the long term for what might happen because of this, it's hard to say. We haven't been in this situation for ages, but the last time we did large increases in tariffs, it was in the midst of the Depression, and it didn't end well. But in the short term, 2 years or a year and a half now, I think this is going to hurt Republicans, because the stock market is, as you see, dropped fairly significantly yesterday, might recover a little bit today, but it's not going to go up that much anytime soon, and the price of goods are going to go up. So I think Republicans will probably end up losing seats, probably potentially both the House and the Senate in the 2026 midterms. And then, we'll see things move around.
I've been candid about this on the air. I don't know if I said it to you or not, but my financial guy told me back in November, December, get out the market. Who knows if tariffs are going to crater the economy or not. So I pulled a bunch of money out, and I have enough in secure vessels so that I can pay my house off if I need to. So I can watch this somewhat detached, because I took his advice. What and we're going to talk to a professor of economics later on about the economic aspects of this. When it comes to the political part of it, people are talking about, and I know this would be in your wheelhouse as part of history, going back to Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act and the golden days of America. And I think what people might be conflating is that it's a different world economy today than it was then. And the world's different than it was then.
Yeah, it is different, but the trade system that we currently have in place, or we did until yesterday, really started post-World War II, when the United States was the only economic power left in the world. Everybody else was pretty much destroyed. Their economies were destroyed by the war. So we could do what we wanted for a lot of years there. Good in the 1950s, 1960s, even to the 1970s, we were by far the biggest economy. We really didn't have competition. That competition started. What did we start doing? We started putting in tariffs on steel, on automobiles and so forth, because we use tariffs as a political tool. They're not a fundraising tool per se. They're a political tool.
They were originally, right? A fundraising tool?
Well, yeah, they were. McKinley? Because we didn't have an income tax. Income tax was not legal.
Right.
But the biggest problem, and I've gone, you and I have talked about this, it goes back to Congress abdicating their responsibilities. Congress has the power under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution to regulate the collection of duties and imports and tariffs and so forth. But there's a law passed in 1934, the Reciprocal Trade Agreement, which basically the logic was, well, the president needs to move more quickly on tariffs, so we'll let him go on a state-by-state basis, country-by-country basis, and raise or lower tariffs. That got expanded twice to the point where Congress really doesn't have much control over tariffs anymore because they gave it up. And now they're going to be pointing the finger, both Republicans and Democrats, Democrats definitely, at Trump saying the tariffs are a bad thing. Why are you doing this? Well, Congress had the power to stop them all along, but they've given that up, like they've given up a lot of their powers.
So when it comes to the president saying that there's going to be a little bit of pain before reward, how does the voter view that? And how much pain are they willing to put up with? And how would they view a reward, regardless of how a man who is not prone to hyperbole spends it?
Well, I think, first of all, you got to think of the time horizon. In 2 years, in the 26 midterms, Republicans were not likely to do well anyway. The president's party almost always loses seats in the midterm elections, and both House and the Senate are so close, it's such that Republicans would likely lose control if one, if not both of those. This is going to amplify Democrats to prove to them. Democrats can use this to prove to them that they were right and Trump was wrong, and they need to have some the clawback power in Washington. I think that you're going to see, if the prices go up, inflation goes up because of this, that Republicans are going to be disappointed and not going to show up as much like they did in 2018, or like they didn't do in 2018. So these cycles are there, and I think that politically, in the short term, this is definitely going to hurt Republicans. But in the long term, this is part of a bigger shift. So the Republican Party used to be the party of business, the party of the economic elites. It's not anymore. It's the blue-collar party. You notice that one of the Democrats that isn't complaining about this are senators and congressmen from Michigan. Mm-hmm. They like this because it's protection of industries like the automobile industry in Michigan. And you see the UAW president now suddenly kind of friendly to Trump after being very antagonistic towards him during the 2024 election campaign. So follow the money, see who gets helped. We're having a major shift in the alignment of the political parties. It's been happening over quite some time, but this is only going to further solidify that as the Republican Party no longer really being the party of business, I think.
All right, let me take a break. We'll come back and talk about Mike Johnson having his rear end handed to him on proxy voting, what all of that means. 621 traffic now, WWL. President Trump yesterday, as he announced Liberation Day and tariffs, somebody texted in again and again and again. Why is it okay for other countries to place tariffs on American goods but not okay for America to reciprocate? That is a question for Peter Ricchiuti, the professor of finance at Tulane. It'll join us at 7:15 right now. We're talking to Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. Yeah, I'm going too fast here, Andy. Tell me about what's going on with Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House from Louisiana, and proxy voting.
Well, this, I think, starts with the showing how close the House of Representatives is divided, equally pretty much between Republicans and Democrats. Johnson can't afford to lose any votes. Proxy voting is something that's fairly popular among both, certainly Democrats, but partially Republicans.
What is it, Andy, proxy voting?
It's to allow people to vote by proxy because they can't make it to the chamber themselves. Mm-hmm. So I can give my vote to you and say, here, go deliver my vote to the Speaker of the House, the head of the House there, so you don't have to be there. And it's pushed by two women who say it's not fair for women after they've had a baby to have to be in the House to vote on these things. It kind of keeps them from being able to participate. That got support by Anna Paulina Luna, who's a Republican from Florida. And so there were enough votes for that to go through to be discharged. That's what's called a discharge petition. So you can have a vote on the floor for it. Johnson didn't want that because he can't afford to lose a vote here or there. He wants to know exactly who's in that room when there's voting going on.
So it comes down to face-to-face, right, Andy? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Okay. You have to be in the room to vote. You have to be able to say aye or nay if somebody calls your name. What happened
but,
then?
But I'm saying, let me just jump in 1 second. That's what Mike Johnson wants. Mike Johnson's saying, no, you're going to vote against me. You're going to stand here and do it in front of me, basically.
Well, it just requires any vote that goes in the House of Senate, the House right now, to be in person.
Right.
This would allow you to not have to be there in person, not just this particular vote, but any vote.
Gotcha.
But the thing that's interesting is that Johnson tried to stop this. The Speaker of the House really has enormous powers, and one of them is that he can use kind of special rules to prevent issues from coming to the floor of the House. He can keep them aside, essentially. Well, that's where he lost the vote, because there were 9 Republicans that went along to prevent this from happening, because they said, you know what? They've got the votes. They've got the votes for the discharge petition. This should go to the House, and House floor, and we should vote on it. And that's why Johnson basically stopped everything from happening, because he doesn't want this to go forward. It's kind of a delay technique, a stalling tactic to try to prevent this from happening in the future. So he's going to twist some arms here over the next few days to try to get the people to pull back on this, or try to make some sort of a deal. But it's certainly not something that helps his power within as a speaker. But I think all of it is a result of the House so evenly divided between Republicans and Democrats that the Republicans can't afford to lose a vote.
Have you ever heard of stick voting in Louisiana, Andy?
No, I have not heard of stick voting.
It's kind of like proxy voting, what they used to do, and I don't think it's legal anymore, but one legislator, when the other one wasn't there, would have a stick and lean over and press the other one's button to vote for him. I swear to God that's true.
I like that.
Yeah, stick voting. Well, thank you, Andy.
Who'd have thought that would happen in Louisiana?
Crazy stuff, huh? Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. We'll take a break. Talk to Mike Strain, Commissioner of the Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, when we come back. Time now, WWL First News. 6:44, 16 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Hot, humid, windy. Could be that way through the weekend, and then a cool front comes through. Chance for showers Saturday, and really more so Sunday, and then it cools off a little bit. Mike Strain joins us now. Our friend, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, Dr. Mike Strain, a very skilled and beloved veterinarian. How you doing, Mike?
Man, I'm doing excellent. How are you, Tommy?
I am okay. Teddy and I had a little moment yesterday. Teddy, the mutt, because we were playing,
uh-huh.
And all of a
lucky
sudden...
Lucky Teddy.
Yeah, all of a sudden he decided that it was time to just stop and take a leak in the middle of the living room. And, of course, we had to have a discussion about that. I don't know what went through mind or through his – well, I do know what went through his bladder. I don't know what went through his mind, but I think we're on the right page now. How's Hootie?
Man, Hootie is doing great. Hootie's always trying to help me in the mornings. You know, Hootie loves when I get on the radio because, you know, she wants to participate. And so she's having a wonderful time out here on the farm. I tell you what. You know, when we come back in the next life, we need to be our pets, right?
You got that
Teddy
right.
And Hootie.
Teddy's got it. Man, I'm going to tell you what, he does. And I think that dog, I saw a lab yesterday. Not that this is important, but Mike, do Labradors have a tail that curls up? Is that common for Labrador retrievers, a big, thick tail
some
that
do.
Curls up?
Some do. Some have, but most common they lay flat. But sometimes they do. And a lot of times you can look at different lineages of animals, and they will have similar characteristics. You know, it's just like, you know, some blue heelers look a certain way, and, you know, some Catahoula curs, you know, there's some that the tail goes down. We call them hooky tails, mm-hmm. you know, so... Yeah, each species is just a little bit different.
All right, let's talk about
Labradors. They're out there, you know. They're looking. They got their tail up. They're out there. They're looking to see something, looking to find something, looking to retrieve something. They're looking.
And what about the pointing thing? When dogs do that, they raise that little hand, the little arm, and point. Yeah, is that specific to any breed?
Yes, it's more specific, you know, to bird dogs and to hunt dogs, and that's been instilled into their genes for generations. You know, my dad used to raise pointers, and we hunted quail and woodcock here on the North Shore, and it's just amazing. You didn't have to train them to do it. It was inherent in them. Now, you had to train them to hunt because they would try to, you know, jump in the middle of the birds until you got them trained, but they would point, and then after you would shoot the birds, they would go find them and bring them back to you. You know, it's amazing how brilliant these animals are, but what's inherent in their very natures.
Let's talk about tariffs, Mike. Your thoughts on what that could mean for, I'm not talking about the politics, I'm talking about the actual effects of on farmers, Louisiana farmers, prices of goods, et cetera.
Well, we will know, you know, shortly. You know, this is going into effect all by April the 5th. We're going to see higher prices for many things, but mainly for the goods for American farmers, it's really going to affect our export markets. And so if you saw, you know, yesterday, initially at, you know, at the close of business, most of the different stocks and commodities were flat or went up. Now, that being said, overnight, the Dow futures has dropped by 1,000 points. So everything's going to be a rough morning this morning. And I know we are working to see what the net effect's going to be on the value of our commodities. We went through this in 2019. But on the other side is the world desperately needs our commodities, because across the board, the world is consuming more commodities than we're producing. So that helps us there. But it is going to have some effects. It will be crop by crop, country by country, depending on where our major markets are. And what we have to look out for, the direct tariffs for us, is the other part is the retaliatory tariffs in the other countries. And they will be crop specific, depending on the main avenue the where we send our products. The other thing we're trying to do is find more uses for our own commodities here in the United States, where we add value to those commodities. For instance, the majority of our corn doesn't leave our shores. It goes into feeding livestock and poultry here. Now, more than half of our soybeans eventually leave our shores, and we're working to see how we can use more here and then send the final products overseas. But for initially, everything that causes instability, generally, you know, it's a challenge. And I've been talking to my different distributors and all of our exporters, and we're going to have to deal with it, you know, in lifetime. And, but, you know, once these things level out, then things are okay. But in the short term, it causes some instability.
Tell me about egg prices. The president mentioned something about egg prices yesterday during his speech. I didn't write down the price, and I don't have the soundbite in front of me. But he was saying that egg prices are way down. I don't know. I don't eat eggs.
They are way down. They are way down. If you look at the market report that came out on the 21st, it came out, the average wholesale price across the United States of white large shell eggs went down another 89 cents to $3.27 per dozen. Here in this particular region right now, they are in and around that $3 to $3.49 a dozen. You can find some pretty good deals. So the bottom line, eggs are coming down. Several things. We've increased production. We've gotten more in the warehouses. But when it got so high, people quit buying them. There was demand destruction. So that's good news. You can find eggs in and around $3 a dozen in some of the different stores. And so that is good. And also they loosened the rules on this cage free so that, again, we could get more eggs produced. And we have not seen a big surge in the avian influenza. For right now, it's slowed down, which is a good thing, so that we can kind of rebuild our flocks.
Mike, what's, I don't know, again, I don't eat eggs, not that I have anything against them, I just for whatever reason don't eat them. Tell me about, like, what's a normal price for eggs, or I don't know what a normal price is for a dozen, considering there's no avian flu and everything else.
We get really used to buying eggs at $1.89, $1.99, you know, and you can remember seeing eggs as a loss leader in grocery stores, $1.29. Okay. And so, you know, buying large, if you go back and look at, you know, egg prices a year ago, they were under that $3. And so as we get closer to that $2.25, $2.50, it's more comfortable for us. But getting down to $3 has been a big deal. They're still, you know, on the high side, but it's much, much better. We'd like to see them get in and around that $2.25 a dozen.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Mike Strain. We've got to talk about crawfish prices. We also have to talk about the upcoming legislative session, 6:51. 9 till 9. You got any questions, comments, 504-260-1870. That's the Oakland Art Jeweler Talk and Text line. Now we pause for traffic on WWL. 6:56 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Thursday morning. That's time to talk to Mike Strain, Dr. Mike Strain, Commissioner, Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. Mike, when it comes to legislative session, what are some of the things that you'll be looking for?
Well, right now we are reading the bills as they are being filed. We're working. We have some department bills. One is something we've worked on actually for a couple of years. That's going to be with Senator Alain and others. And it's where we're going to be able to use gypsum that is produced as a byproduct at our manufacturing plants and use that as a sulfur fertilizer. Where we're at now, a lot of the lands are becoming depleted in sulfur because we no longer have sulfur that is emitted into the air from burning fossil fuels. And what's happened is that as a result, since we haven't done that in over 20 years, a lot of the soils that had the sulfur, that sulfur is being depleted because it was deposited there, since the early 1900s. Mm-hmm. So we are doing that because a lot of the soils have to have 300 to 600 pounds of sulfur per acre every 5 years. So that is going to be one of our bills. The other bills we're working on with our Representative Guyman and others, there's going to be a lot of policy that is put in place for solar power, and that's we're going to be working intensely on that. And those bills are being filed. We're also going to be working with Senator Fezzi and others on seafood legislation. And the Lieutenant Governor and I were together yesterday in the office trying to streamline all of these rules and regulations for the seafood industry. And so we expect that. So it's going to be a busy session. It's going to be a very short session. But also, though, as you saw yesterday, the governor's executive order with hiring freezes. And as a result of the constitutional amendments not passing, now they've got to reexamine the budget from top to bottom. So all that starts over, and we're trying to see where all that's going to end up. But we're under a hiring freeze effective April the 11th, and it's very stringent. And so it's going to be a very busy session, but they're going to have to get their fiscal house in order. And, of course, whenever that's going on, we pay very close attention to make sure there's no negative impacts to agriculture during that process.
Let's talk about crawfish prices and availability and all that, Mike.
Yes, crawfish prices are good. You see them advertised this morning. You know, you can go to Rouse's at $3.25 a pound. I see them anywhere from $3.25 to $3.99 a pound. A lot of availability, and they are really, really good. Mm-hmm. So now is the time. You can find strawberries, for around $4.99 to $5.99 a pound, Louisiana strawberries. And we've got Strawberry Festival coming up, and that's April 11th, 12th, and 13th. So we need to be ready. It's going to be high times there in Ponchatoula.
Mike, real quick, if I'm going to sit you down with crawfish, how many pounds can you eat?
Well, I try to stay under 5, but you know how that is.
No,
3 to 5 pounds, and I can tear them up pretty hard. But I like to eat those sweet potatoes along with it. A little corn on the cob, a little bit of sausage, mushrooms.
That's where
we
got
to do the whole deal.
I'm about 5 pounds. That's where I do. You eat the black thing or not?
What's that? Oh, if I do 5 pounds, I got to get up and walk around before I sit back down and do
Mike.
Some more.
So Peter Ricciuti joins us now, professor of finance at Tulane, to talk a little bit about tariffs and so forth. How you doing, Doctor? Is it Doctor Ricciuti or not?
No, it's Peter. Will be good.
Okay, well, Peter Ricciuti, our friend, professor of finance at Tulane. prestigious A.B. Freeman School of Business. So, Peter, when it comes to what the president just said about foreign leaders coming in, and, well, let me play this bite while we're at it, and I'll get that out of the way. So that's what the president had to say, and I guess the question goes to, rhetoric aside, how did American manufacturing get to where it is today, and how did American, the country lose jobs overseas?
Oh, I mean, I guess a couple of things there is, first of all, we're manufacturing more than we ever have in the United States. What we're doing it with fewer people. And that's really the issue, and that's just productivity. You're going to see, for instance, on the productivity side, that's going to hurt jobs. It's going to probably improve the country, but all the technology advancements have been that issue. It really has been it's been more about productivity. And you know, one of the things the president talks about, you know, outside of all the rhetoric, is that we have this imbalance of trade with these other countries. The imbalance of trade is means absolutely nothing. It's what it means is that when you have an imbalance of trade, it simply means that your people can afford to buy more of their stuff than they can afford to buy of your stuff. And that, you know, that's really how it all shakes out.
Let me play one more soundbite from the president here, if I can. Sure. A little bit more of what he had to say. And I wanted to play that because there are so many things involved in there. First of all, is it that simple? Can it get any simpler than that? And secondly, when it comes to taxpayers being ripped off, I don't quite understand what he means by that. Because a lot of economists I've spoken to have said that this is, in essence, the tariff is a tax that people are going to wind up paying it because the money goes to the Treasury. And if you look at the history of tariffs going back to McKinley, it was originally a fundraising thing for the Treasury, not a way to increase American production. Peter, the floor is yours on all of that.
Well, when you look at it, I don't understand why they're calling it reciprocal. What we have now is a pretty good situation. You know, the president inherited a very good economy. We had inflation coming from 9% to 3%. We had record stock market. We had record employment. So I don't know where that's really coming from. One of the things that you know is going to happen is these other countries are going to fight back, and they're going to raise the tariffs that are on the United States. And so where does this end? You know, do we just keep going until we have a worldwide recession? I don't know. I think we've got about an 80% chance of having a recession here in the U.S. And I think I haven't seen it this morning, but the market's down about 1,000 points. The market's pretty good. It's a pretty good indicator of what investors think is going to go on in the future. One of the big problems people have is they don't really know what to do now. I think that this week will be very interesting because people for the first time will open up their 401k statements and realize it's become a 201k. We've lost about 12% on the market. I feel bad for the people who were either retired or very close to announcing their retirement because, you know, this is really going to shake some things up. But the American consumer is going to pay for it. The rest of it is just pure nonsense. And you look at things, Tommy, like there's a bunch of industries, but what I think of mainly is the clothing industry. You know, we haven't paid since we started globalization. We haven't really seen much of an increase in the price of clothing. And in fact, it's dropped dramatically. And, you know, what happens when it goes up? That's a real that's a real point in the U.S. right now. So I don't get it. I don't think you could find an economist that gets it either. And it was done. You look at it, the different percentages to different countries. I mean, nobody understands how those were all calculated. I think what you need is you need to just stop this daily change. The markets can't stand uncertainty. You know, it's how do you make a decision when you don't know? You wake up at 7 in the morning and there's something else staring you in the face. So now, in light of that, I think investors are the tendency right now is to say, I'm going to get out of the market. I'm going to sell my stocks. And then when things drop, I'll buy more of it. And that has never, ever, ever worked. And so I think people are best off just riding this out. You know, the best time to buy stocks is when things are worst. And so I'm not saying this is the bottom, but, you know, most people want to buy stocks when the economy's doing well. And the truth is people do better when they invest when there's some uncertainty out there.
Buying opportunities, I feel somewhat guilty because I've been very candid about this on the air. My financial guy told me months ago, it might not be a bad idea to take some money out of the market, and I did, and put it in a safer vessel so I know I can pay my house off, and I'm not close to retirement or anything, but in case tariffs wreck the economy. So he kind of forecast that, as a lot of people did. Somebody texted and said, you're having a lot of experts on the show explaining why the tariffs are bad. I would like to hear the other side of it with some experts explaining the benefits. I can't say that I'm against the tariffs until I learn more about them. You touched on this just now, Peter, and I tried to text this person back, and technically I can't do it. But the reason is we can't find anybody that says this is going to be a good thing.
No, I will tell, you know, one thing you've got to give the president credit for, though, is he has telegraphed this very, very well. I mean, even when he was running for president, he said this is what he was going to do. And so you've got to be certainly being honest about it. I think that's for sure. And you're going to see, if there was nothing said every morning for like 6 months, people would adjust. You've got to remember that businesses, you give them anything and they will adjust to it. Mm-hmm. But if you keep changing the goalpost, people are going, businesses are going to be paralyzed. They can't make a decision in this environment. And investors are paralyzed. One thing that surprised me in a big way is I thought the businesses in the U.S. would just kind of take all the earnings they have and put it into buying back their own stock. But that's happened a little bit. But the part I really did not get right at all is they're kind of hoarding the money. So that's kind of – so you make your – basically you make your – you make America worse off, and you make the rest of the country, rest of the world worse off. It's going to be a tit for tat. I mean, how can it not be? These people aren't just going to roll over and accept it.
So somebody texted, and Peter, don't take this personally, okay? Because this goes to the disparity in the audience. Two texts back to back from different numbers, a guest that makes sense. Then another one says, your guest is absolutely clueless on tariffs. Now, it takes some cojones to say a guy like Peter Ricchiuti is clueless on tariffs and for you to think, whoever texted this in, that you know more. But when we come back, Peter, somebody texted in and said, explain to me why the president's wrong. Other countries tariff us, so why can't we tariff them? And just talk about the balance of tariffs, if you will, perhaps. Peter Ricchiuti, our guest, professor of finance at Tulane, 722, talking tariffs, traffic, now WWL. 727, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Peter Ricchiuti, professor of finance at Tulane, about tariffs and what the president had to say yesterday. Somebody texted in and said about tariffs, and it goes to the question I asked you before about somebody wanting to know again and again, why is it okay for other countries to place tariffs on American goods, but it's not okay for America to reciprocate? That's what the listener wants to know, Peter.
Well, these countries haven't placed tariffs against the United States. They've just become more efficient, better countries in economics. I mean, they've, you know, they, some of them, of course, have lower labor rates. Some of them are propped up a little bit by the countries themselves. But it's not 1950. It's not where we're the big economic powerhouse. We are. We're the biggest. But it's not as if nobody else exists. And so I don't. And there were no tariffs, so this is going to be the first salvo, and then we're going to raise them. And if you get into a trade war, that doesn't help anyone. The tariffs haven't ever worked. They are they're prosperity killers, and you know I think that's how it shakes out.
Professor, one thing that, you know, and going back to, I was mentioning earlier, after the blockbuster trade that brought me to WWL from the oldie station after Katrina, I was working at night, and I remember talking to a professor about the Pacific Rim, and I remember specifically asking him, so if somebody in Vietnam or in the Pacific Rim is willing to work for $2 a day, and I'm just picking a number out of the air, and here in the United States, you'd have to pay somebody $30 an hour to have a living, a decent wage and manufacture goods here. How do we ever win that battle? And the answer he gave me was, we never do. We don't. So is that accurate still?
Yeah, I think that's true. As these economies, for instance, China has seen their cost of doing business, whether it's equipment or it's more likely labor prices, go up. And eventually, that's what happens. A country reaches a certain degree of wealth, and their costs go up. And so it just kind of it's more of a levelizer than anything else. And they're striving to be level with us. It's not going to reverse. One thing, though, you know, the fact these low costs and these products coming into the United States, they really are helping keep our prices down. You know, we look at everything that's made in the Pacific Rim and, you know, throughout Asia. It's keeping our prices down. I don't know what we'll see next, but I think the most important thing is the uncertainty, though. If you keep changing the rules, people will do nothing, and that's what will head you into a global recession. So if things were to stop right now, and those numbers, which I don't quite get, but they just came out, if those numbers were to stay the same, you would little by little get the economy back on, you know, you'd get the markets and the economy back on its feet. But you know, I'm not sure we're going to see that. That's not what we've seen, you know, so far in the administration. So I can't blame businesses for not doing anything. What you get, of course, is if you're not doing anything, you're paralyzed. Your earnings come down, and when your earnings come down, your stock price goes down, and it just kind of feeds on itself right there. But you will see almost immediate reciprocal tariffs coming in from the other side.
Thank you, Professor.
You know, Yep.
We got to run. I'm sorry we're out of time. I hope you come back, though, and talk, because this is not going to go away anytime soon. We'll take a break, talk to Keith Hinckley, president of Plaquemines Parish, and Troy Duhon about tolls on the Belchase Bridge and tariffs in the car industry right now. Time for WWL First News. 7:46, 14 till 8, Belchase Bridge tolling, more like Belchase Bridge trolling. Keith Hinckley joins us now, president of Plaquemines Parish. How you doing, Keith?
I'm good, Tommy. How about you,
Bill? I'm all right. What's the latest on the tolls?
Well, now it's the 8th, which I believe is next Tuesday. But that's the comment is the earliest as the 8th. Still, on the 6th and the 7th, we're going to have to get together with DOTD and plenary. And, you know, there's a punch list that needs to be completed before the tolling can happen. And, you know, I know a plenary, you know, they're under some serious pressure by their investors. But like basically what I say in the meetings, I don't care. My responsibility is to the constituents of Plaquemines Parish, you being one of them. And
should have built it right the first time. Right, Keith?
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. And they're trying to rush things now at the zero hour. And they just need to back up and look at the project and complete it correctly. And I understand that in the contracts, there's language written in there, you know, as far as the West X Street, which is on the north side of the bridge, certain ways to complete that. And I'm being told now that they can only, should tolling start next week, they can only do lane closures late in the evening and no daylight hours. But at the same time, we are really going to have to take a look at that and see what they're talking about, lane closures. And let me tell you, I got to thank Sheriff Turlich. He's been right there next to me throughout this whole process, Major Solis with the Sheriff's Office. We're standing together on this issue here, Tommy, and we're not going to back down.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to a mutual friend on Saturday at the crawfish boil, and we were talking about, you know, commiserating about toll. They had the audacity to have a sign that said toll start, which they didn't yet, but then have the bridge closed to one lane only. And it's like, no, hang on a second. You finish the job, you get the bridge all the way open. And I heard him say that you said that you would go up there and start moving cones if you had to, if they started charging tolls. You did say that, didn't you?
Jerry would probably have to arrest me at that.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't blame you at all. So the GoPass, how's that working out? I tried to get one and had to try like five times to finally get it. And for people that don't know, you can't just cross the bridge. The toll is a quarter, I think, if you're a resident, but it's $2.76 if you don't pay the toll or you don't have a toll tag. What are you hearing from residents? And
you're correct. There's multiple layers of fees. you know, non-tolls, residents that don't have tolls, it's X amount of dollars. Commercial in the Plaquemines Parish, it's certain amount. It's all over the place with different prices, but it's not an easy process, Tommy.
No,
and I just don't, you know. And look, that is not a government, that is not our responsibility. But you know, we get the arguments, and
yeah,
we get the
go pass is not you. That's the state of Louisiana.
It's
real
not,
quick,
it, Keith, it is not me.
Before we run, you need to have a transponder on your car, right? You need to have that, or else
that's
you're going to be charged the higher fee.
Exactly, because now they're going to have to do some research on your license plates, try to find out who you are, where you are, and then that way you'll get a bill in the mail.
All right, don't tell Jerry, but I have an alternative plan in place, all right?
We're all good here, Tommy.
Thank you, Keith Hinckley. So as it's set, April 8th now for tolls, but even then you're going to make sure that there's no more, try to do what you can to make sure that we don't have tolls while there are lane closures, this, that, the other thing.
Exactly, Tommy. We're not laying down on this, but
thank you, sir.
Okay.
Appreciate it. All right. Keith Hinckley, president of Plaquemines Parish, 7:50, 10 till 8. We'll talk to Troy Duhon. We'll come back about the effect of tariffs on the car business right now in traffic, WWL. 7:54, 6 till 8, quickly. To my boy, Troy Duhon. I'm Tommy Tucker, WWL, owner of the premier family of dealerships throughout the country, really. How you doing, Troy?
Hey, Tommy, how you doing?
I'm all right, sir. Tell me about, because, man, I don't know who better to ask than you, the effect of tariffs on the car industry. We can look at it from your side, from the consumer side, et cetera.
Well, bottom line is you got an administration who is trying to develop jobs. What you're thinking, what they're thinking is short-term pain for long-term gain. I think what they failed to realize is that this has been going on for decades. So manufacturers have invested billions of dollars with trade treaties that now he just wants to drop an atomic bomb and blow it up. And that's kind of what he's doing. And so from a dealer's perspective, the prices that we sell cars for has no choice but to go up because manufacturers are going to pass that cost. Which manufacturers get affected the most? I would venture to say that most European manufacturers' highlines are going to be affected the most. Your Toyotas, your Nissans, your Hondas, they do a lot of manufacturing here. Even your heavy-duty Ram trucks are produced in Mexico. Ford does, General Motors does manufacturing in Canada. It's going to be crazy, Tommy. And I'm going to be honest with you, COVID prices caused automobiles to go up about 28%. So pre-COVID, the average transaction price was only $38,000 on a brand new car. Post-COVID, it went to $48,000. And now my concern is that it's going to go over $50,000, which is causing people in middle America to struggle because historically they're used to car payments of $550 to $600. Now you're talking $650 to $800. So, I mean, I know the administration wants to create the jobs. I'm just concerned that the way they're going about it is dropping an atomic bomb and not giving these manufacturers an opportunity to gradually do this. Because even the cars that are assembled here, some of the parts, Tommy, are coming from overseas. So,
and that's what I wanted to ask you. As the owner of a dealership, how do you even know how much to charge for the car or at what point the tariffs go on or what?
Well, so the manufacturers are not stupid. So some of my allocations this week were postponed, Tommy. So all of a sudden, I don't want to get in what OEMs did it, but they postponed the allocation because they're going to see as these cars hit the port this week, what are the tariffs going to be? And then they're going to readjust those Moroni labels.
So they didn't send you the cars. They're going to wait to see what. I got you. Okay.
Yep.
All right.
And then what's happening is if I'm a consumer and I'm thinking about buying a car, and I know you expect to hear this from me because I'm a car guy, you better get your fanny in a dealership now because the cars that are on the ground today, I guarantee you, are going to be anywhere from 6% to 20% less money than what's going to come in 3 weeks.
So you
that
said
I guarantee you.
You said the cars – say that part again.
The cars that are in my inventory right now are cheaper than the cars that are going to come in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
So when it comes to COVID, you said they went up 28%. They did not come down, right?
No.
So,
and what's going to happen is if the price, the manufacturers raised their prices during COVID, now the government is forcing the manufacturers to raise them again. So it's crazy.
So if they go up again, you don't expect them to come down, or?
No, no. The only thing that's going to cause prices to come down is the manufacturers decide to incentivize through rebates, through subvented interest rates. You know, and my only bigger concern here is that you're raising the cost of the most expensive transaction next to our house to the American mm-hmm. people. So now your inflation is going to go up, which means the feds will never cut rates again. And that's going to cause the housing market to have a ripple that could throw this economy in a major recession, because we need people building homes and we need people buying cars, because those are the two things that generate the taxes to balance a budget. That's where the municipal governments and the state governments and the federal governments get most of their revenue, is from sales tax.
All right, I got to ask you how much. I got to ask you real quick. What about the effects of on Giving Hope, NOLA, the charity that you operate, and provide or what people are going to need?
No, we can still do that. But one last comment, Tommy.
Yeah.
The used car prices at the auction yesterday, I've never seen them. They went through the roof. So if not only the new car prices going up, Tommy, the used car prices went through the roof yesterday throughout the country. It was crazy.
Thank you, Troy. Appreciate it.
All right, Tom, you bet. Take care.
And Troy Duhon, you know, it's interesting because we have had economists on. Troy Duhon is a very successful businessman, got dealerships all over the country. So he's kind of giving you the businessman side of it. Again, I think that's factual in terms of what the results are going to be in terms of car prices, because he's seeing it. We'll have to see if anything changes between now and a couple of weeks from now. I still stand by my earlier statement about tariffs, where you don't know until you line up. We'll see, but just make sure that the right person gets the credit or the right person gets the blame if it works or doesn't work. We'll talk to Joe Geruso when we come back. 824, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined now by Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council member. How you doing, Joe?
I'm good, Tommy. Sorry, I was a little late there.
Yeah, no worries at all. I was talking about Nathan Pierce and a story in the NOLA.com today about the people that he clothes and his tailor operation in Baton Rouge. I'm just curious, you're a successful guy. Have you ever had a suit custom made or not?
I have not. I may once in my life had a shirt that was custom made. Mm-hmm. And then once I saw the price tag, I was like, maybe I'm more of off the rack kind of guy.
Yeah, I am too. But just once, I want to have a suit tailor made around me, and I want to stand up, and I want to have the sleeveless jacket. You know what I'm talking about? Where they're marking the chalk all over it and everything else, just to feel like a big dog.
I think once it's worth a shot. Yeah. I'm not there yet.
And by the time I can afford that, they're going to rip the back out of it and lay me in the box. Let's talk about...
Well,
yeah.
I was going to say tariffs may catch up with you before then. So
there
we'll
you
say.
Go. If you got to go, you got to go. Let's talk about tariffs on the city budget. As a matter of fact, are you concerned about that? Is that something that throws a wild card in the city spending?
The tariffs so far don't super concern me for the city budget. I think we've tried to acquire a bunch of vehicles before all of this happened. But certainly, think about it, if they're saying there's going to be something between $3,000 to $7,000 more per vehicle, and cities tend to buy in bulk, that's a significantly more money if you're buying more cars. And since COVID, things have had a longer lead time. So these things have a tendency of cascading, and you do tend to worry a little bit about what's going to happen. And obviously, the biggest thing for us is how can you try and keep costs down and revenue up? So we're going to keep an eye on it. And obviously, the other thing too, Tommy, is are there cuts that are happening at the federal level to other federal programs, and then decisions that have to be made there? Again, so far, we haven't seen the overwhelming cut of things that are affecting New Orleans, but I think we have to prepare. And as I've always said, you watch and be vigilant. It doesn't mean that you're an alarmist.
And also, you can't pretend or plan on everything going perfectly smoothly, because as we all know, it never does.
That's exactly right. Well, and look, that's a really good point. Because I think early when I was elected, I was frustrated with the administration because let's know every dollar to the detail and where every penny is, and you want to know. And to your point, there's going to be stuff that happens. A city budget is much like your home. The refrigerator is going to break. The car garage is going to break. You're going to get a pop tire. You need some extra money in some places to make up for that. And so I think the city and most cities build contingencies into their budget for natural events, for unexpected downturns, for things happening at the federal government. And so you have to kind of build your budget out, not with the idea of you're going to spend every single last penny like you may die that year, but with some held back in reserve and trying to do what's going to happen, because you're 100% right. There's never a perfect year.
Living within your means, same thing when it comes to budgeting. So let's talk about the city is not exactly flush with cash, I don't think. Talk about the school board settlement. I tried to explain the skim briefly. I think it started with $120 million in the city skimmed from the school board. Settlement was $90 million. Now we're down to $10 million. Am I close to accurate there, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about this. So the deal is kind of three parts. The first part is $20 million cash in hand to the school board, and that was supposed to be $10 million at the beginning of January and the second $10 million at the beginning of April. We filed ordinances just now to fund the second $10 million payment. Apparently yesterday, the chief financial officer filed a temporary restraining order to prevent the first $10 million from going out the door, when my understanding was the administration said they were going to honor that, and the judge said they were ordered to make that payment. So we'll see what happens there. I don't understand it too, Tommy, because it seems like if the mayor signed the budget ordinance allowing the $10 million to be spent, have somebody who is her junior can override what she does, but that's a story for another day, I guess. The second part of it is what you talked about, the skimming. The city has taken an administrative fee off of the funds collected, and we would stop doing that. Councilmember Morrell has a specific ordinance to prohibit that practice. And then the last piece is essentially the rest of the payment over a 10-year period, with about $7 million per year going to mental health through Thrive Kids or a program like that for kids who are incarcerated using the HERA funds that we have, and then $1 million per year for workforce education, such as through Youth Force NOLA. So it's a real way to not put all the money on the table right now, to smooth out the problems that the school board is having, to take this huge liability off the city's books, and to make sure that those programs that are really important for economic stability, for safety, are scaled up and out, so that way kids have a chance to thrive and grow in the city.
Thank you, Joe. Get yourself a suit. You deserve it. You got that big legal job coming up. You're going to have to look sharp in court.
I appreciate it, Tommy. I'll let them know.
Don't charge it to me. Just go get one. Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council member, will take a break, talk to Patrick McMath, Louisiana State Senator, about the upcoming session, fortified roofs, and more. Right now, time for WWL First News. 8:45, 16 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Another windy, hot, I'll say, muggy day ahead. And next hour, we're going to talk to Alex Hammerstone, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec. We had a lot of confusion going on with tolls with the Belchase Bridge. Also, a lot of texts that are being sent out about unpaid tolls. It's a scam. We'll delve into that with Alex. Then we're going to talk to Deuce McAllister, about his thoughts on how the Saints' offseason's gone so far. Kellen Moore, what his biggest questions are. Look ahead to the draft. So a lot coming up there. Right now, we're joined by Louisiana State Senator Patrick McMath from Covington to talk about the upcoming session. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. How you doing?
I'm all right, sir. Tell me what some of your things that you're focused on for the session, some of the bills you pre-filed are about.
Well, first and foremost, you know, insurance rates, home, auto, that's something that's always on the top of people's minds, something that we hear of, and quite honestly, we pay too much for it, both me personally and my constituents. And so we're doing I got a bill that I'd like to talk to you about today. I just filed it, Senate Bill 52. It provides a tax exemption for if you receive a fortified roof grant to beef up your roof. So I was surprised, quite honestly, that grant was taxed as income when I found out just a few days ago. And so filed this bill to make it easier and more affordable for folks to fortify their homes, and in preparation of of the storms that we have to endure in Louisiana, and with an attempt to help lower homeowners insurance premiums.
I want to ask you about that, because I was talking to a guy that owns a roofing company not too long ago, and he echoed something that somebody told me before Katrina, and that it concerns garage doors, and if the garage door is not fortified and the garage door comes off, fortified roof or not, if it's like 120 mile an hour winds, the door kind of folds like an aluminum can, and at that point the wind rushes in and fortified or not, lifts the roof off of your house. And I had forgotten about that until I was talking to this man in the roofing business, and I kind of got my attention about insurance rates and fortified roofs, et cetera. Has any thought been given to that, any research in the fortification of garage doors or the importance of it?
I think you might have just stumbled upon a pretty good business idea there, Tommy. Something I didn't think of, quite honestly, yeah, until you just said that, but from a construction standpoint, it makes perfect sense. We need to get the Insurance Institute to take a look at that.
So is that something legislatively you would begin to look at or not?
Well, I don't know of any program that has a fortified garage door program,
uh-huh,
but I guess we need to look into it.
Talk about the fortified roof program. Is there any way a fortified home, and I guess if you're going to include garage doors, it would be a fortified home, but is there any way to find more money to expand that program so more people, because as it stands now, it's a lottery, right? So maybe you can, maybe you can't, depends if your number comes up, to make it more available to people?
It is, and we need, as a legislature, we need to prioritize. I mean, and we do. We've got a lot of people up there right now that are fighting on figuring out ways to lower not just homeowners insurance, but auto insurance and health insurance, quite honestly. That grant amount would be considered, a one-time expense that the state legislature can allocate money to every year. And as long as we have money to put into that program, I think you're going to see that being prioritized. Because, again, we have to make Louisiana affordable for people to live.
Somebody texted in about car insurance, and they related it to tariffs, and I don't mean to bring you into the tariff conversation, but they're saying that if the price of cars goes up, price of used cars go up, if something gets damaged, it's going to have to be replaced, the price of that goes up perhaps with tariffs. Are you concerned about that as it relates to the fight to bring down auto insurance rates in the state?
Yeah, I think everything's obviously connected with what's going on with the Trump administration and these proposed tariffs. It's my understanding, though, that those tariffs are for vehicles that are made outside of the United States and imported in. So I would encourage buy U.S. while you can. And but look, we're also, I got to give it to Governor Landry and Secretary Susan Bourgeois. We've just made a tremendous announcement about the Hyundai steel manufacturing plant that's coming to Louisiana. It is known and it is out there that Louisiana is open for business with the Meta data center that's going in Richland Parish in North Louisiana, the Hyundai plant. There is over 300 projects that are in the pipeline that Secretary Bourgeois and Governor Landry are working to bring to Louisiana, there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to get an auto plant if one's on the table.
But you know, when it comes to buying American, that's not as easy as it sounds, because the parts are made here and maybe cross the border several times back and forth till they wind up in a car.
I am fairly certain that I was driving on the interstate the other day and a rock flew up and busted my windshield. And I'm fairly certain I'm going to have to import that windshield. I'm not looking forward to the extra 25%. I can tell you that.
Okay. Let's take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back 8:50, 10 till 9. Traffic now, WWL. 8:55, 5 till 9. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to State Senator Patrick McMath about the upcoming session. Back in March, West Virginia Governor Patrick Morrisey signed a bill in a law that the legislature passed to eliminate 7 artificial dyes: red dye number 3, number 40, yellow dye number 5, number 6, blue dye number 1, number 2, green dye number 3, from food products and drugs sold in the state, and the preservatives, and I got to be careful here, I don't want to curse, butylated hydroxyanisole and propylparaben will also be banned. And Senator McMath, I know you've also addressed some of the stuff that's going to be included or should be included in school lunches, right? Talk about that.
That's right. And this bill, Tommy, it's Senate Bill 14. This is the one that I'm by far and away the most excited about. I chair the Senate Health and Welfare Committee. I find it's one of my duties and obligations as the chairman of that committee to promote and ensure that folks are educated at the very least on what makes them healthy and what makes them sick. And food has a tremendous amount to do with how we feel and how our body operates. It is literally the fuel that fuels us, right? And so I went down this rabbit hole. To get a little personal, my wife was diagnosed with a nutrition-based illness about a year and a half ago, and really kind of dug into the research and started reading books and listening to podcasts about nutrition. And if you haven't read it yet, please, I would encourage everyone to go and read Good Energy by Casey and Callie Means. And that book and others that I've read and discussions that I've had with those folks and RFK Jr. is a big promoter of this, has really led me to how we got to Senate Bill 14. And it is a comprehensive nutrition-based bill. It deals with everything from prohibiting ultra-processed food in schools to requiring warning labels for products that contain ingredients that are banned already in Europe that have been found to be dangerous. It deals in seed oils and continuing education for physicians. It is by far and away the most comprehensive nutrition bill that's going to go through any legislature this year. But it's based on bills that have gone through West Virginia, like you said, Texas, Utah, Arizona, Florida. All of these states are passing legislation because there's this tremendous movement that's taking place right now in this country post-COVID, where people are really paying attention for the first time in a very, very long time to their personal health and their children's health and what goes in food and what ingredients are in the stores that we're shopping in and what chemicals we're using on our plants. And so this bill is a reflection of that movement.
I'm not a big fan of processed food, but have you ever seen the documentary Fed Up?
I have.
And you know the damage that sugar causes to young people and obesity and the problems that result as a result that happen as a result of people consuming so much sugar, right?
Louisiana has nearly a 40% obesity rate. All right, it's one of the highest in the country, and a country, by the way, that has the highest obesity rate in the world. So another list that we shouldn't be on. But I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that we're consuming things that didn't exist 80 years ago, like the artificial sugars and the dyes. And if you can't, like you had a very difficult time pronouncing an ingredient. If you have a hard time, reading a word, you probably shouldn't be eating it because it's not real. It's not natural. And our bodies don't know how to process that. Right. And it's no one's fault. This is big food and it's been a very profitable business.
We got to run. Senator, good luck with doing anything with sugar in the state because it's not going to happen. And, if you saw Fed Up, the Obamas tried to take on big food and that didn't happen so well either. It backed them down. So I would suggest y'all watch Fed Up if you get a chance. They got a little bit of politics in there, but mainly stick to the science about how your body processes sugar, and it'll explain why so many of us have so hard of a time maintaining our weight. Thank you, Senator McMath. We'll be back with Alex Hammerstone and Internet Scams. 909, I would ask you listening right now, would you make a bet right now that stocks do not wind up in the green by the end of the day? Because I would not. Would you? Text me at 504-260-1870. Somebody texted in and says, Tommy, if you want to curb obesity, let your kids eat anything they want and get them off the couch so they can burn off the excess calories. Again, That is wrong. That is exactly why kids are so fat, because if you watch Fed Up and see the way your body processes sugar, they can't exercise enough to burn it off. Your body converts sugar to fat if it doesn't use it immediately. It converts it to fat immediately. And then you'd have to run like 18 hours a day to burn off two Cokes. So you can't do it. It's about the processing of sugar. Please look up Fed Up and watch it, and that'll help you. Somebody else texted in about tariffs and said that I'm a nervous Nelly because I move my money out of the market. I don't think that makes me a nervous Nelly. I think it makes me a tuned-in Tommy. Unless you like having your financial rear end kicked, then have at it. Alex Hammerstone joins us now, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec. How are you, Alex?
I am doing pretty well, although watching the same news as everybody else, so it's going to be an interesting day, I believe.
Let me ask you this, Alex, since we've spent the morning talking about tariffs, and rightfully so, do you see with your experience that this could spawn, either with the stock market plunging, and again, who knows, it could finish in the green. I wouldn't bet against it. Who knows? But with the stock market plunging and people so concerned about tariffs, does this lend itself to new scams going out there or repurposing of old scams?
It absolutely does. So, you know, as we kind of talk about throughout the seasons, you know, a lot of the scams remain the same, but use the latest news to kind of, you know, be a wrapper around that scam. And I think especially when it comes to people that are nervous financially, right? You know, I always like to say, you know, scammers will never promise you conservative, you know, 4% gains every year, right? They're always going to help you get rich quick or something like that. And so in a very volatile financial environment, I think this is going to absolutely allow for scammers to kind of come out and offer people ways to supposedly make a bunch of money or protect their money, and they may end up losing it all.
So along those lines, I guess the first bit of advice is, if it sounds too good to be true, it is. And as you said that, the first thing that popped into my mind was Bernie Madoff and the Ponzi scheme, where in a down economy, and I'm not saying the economy is down yet, let me clarify that, but people start looking for ways to make quick, easy money. And for the most part, there is no quick, easy money.
Right. I mean, it's, you know, we're all kind of used to, you know, what was the market up last year, like 25% or something. So I think people are used to that kind of environment. And now, you know, for us older folks, we've seen, you know, more volatility over our lives. And I think people will be looking for kind of ways to continue to get gains. And that really can be just rife for scammers.
Just out of curiosity, Alex, when you say us older folks, to whom are you referring?
Anyone that was around in 2008, right, and kind of before that. You know, it's I think a lot of, you know, younger people that have gotten into the market. You know, I'm certainly not a financial expert, but they just kind of seen, you know, overall gains over the years. You know, we had the pretty big dip with COVID and things like that. But the conventional wisdom was always kind of, if you get into index funds, you'll be ahead, you know, if not in a month, but in a couple of years. And so I don't know if that will change, but I think that a lot of people who haven't been through those rough rides previously are going to have an interesting time.
So you're talking about the older folks that are like 35, just to be clear? That's what you're saying?
Yeah, for sure.
Those old timers? Those old timers? Those up to 40? Those old timers like that? The people that are up to 40? Man, God
right,
bless them.
Yes.
God bless them. Yeah, ready for the rocking chair at 40 or 35. I think we got a quarterback still playing at 40, don't we, somewhere in the NFL?
I will tell you, once I hit 45, my sleep and my hips are the two things I notice most.
No. I'm a little older than that, Alex, and I can tell you, when you turn 50, and everybody at home, listen to this, I mean it sincerely, at 50, all of that goes away. At 50, I don't know what it is, it's like some kind of magic number. Everything turns around in your body, your vision clears up, the aches and pains go away, and you feel, quite frankly, like you're young again, and your health continues to improve, as does your vision, aches and pains, and everything else as you matriculate through life. So you got that to look forward to, all right?
I'm excited.
Yeah. Again, now that's a scam I just perpetrated on you because it's free and easy, and it sounds great, but it's not true. I keep getting these, and we got a local bridge here that's getting ready to have tolls, and I said earlier it's more like trolls than tolls because they're on, no, they're not. They're on, no, they're not. They're on, no, they're not. And recently I've been besieged, and I don't know if it's related or not, with texts that tell me I owe unpaid tolls. And I shouldn't do this because it goes against everything you say but I got so aggravated at one point that I texted back and said, your mom charges tolls, which I probably shouldn't have done because maybe I opened some information to him or whatever. Talk about the unpaid toll scam that seems to be sweeping this area and maybe the country.
Now, I will say it's possible the scammers, you know, parents do work in the toll industry or the paid road industry.
That's true.
But
that's not not exactly what I meant, Alex.
I know. But I think I get tons of these too, right? I think just in the past week I've gotten, you know, 7 or 8 of these toll scams. And, you know, scammers do what works, right? So they test out kind of the different scams, and if they're successful, they'll kind of turn up the volume on them. And, you know, tolls are really kind of a perfect scam because, you know, it's people, I think a lot of it's kind of mystifying, right? So we all have these, you know, kind of things that we stick on our windshield, and sometimes it's pay by plate and, you know, different municipalities or states or what have you, you know, whether it's EasyPass or GoPass or, you know, whatever you're using. And so, especially because the toll amounts are generally small, right? So if you get a text message saying you owe $600 or, you know, some larger amount, you know, obviously that raises a lot of suspicion. But we all drive, or most of us drive, right? And so it's very believable that we may owe a few dollars to a toll agency. And so that's why this is so successful. And people will kind of click on the link in there, you know, go to pay their, you know, $3 or $7 or whatever they supposedly owe. But at that point, they're not just out that $3 or $7. The scammer now has that payment method and can kind of charge whatever they want. So we've seen a lot of people getting hit by this, and it costing a lot of people some money.
I was tempted to say your mother drives, but that would have been completely uncalled for, and I was in a place where I shouldn't have been. I want to talk about passwords with you, Alex, because I've spoken to people, and I know in my own life, if I had it to do all over again, I would love to, with the different email addresses and buying apps and different phones. I have so many passwords scattered about, and I keep getting something when I try to put something in the iPhone, a contact or whatever. Do I want to go to Yahoo and log in with the password? I have no idea what that password is. Other things, you need a password for this, password for that. I know you talk about password manager. Help people like myself that are just in password hell, because I don't know what is the right password for this account, that account. Is there any way to press the password reset and start all over?
So I don't know if we can reset, but I think just like everything else, your password management kind of philosophy needs to be based on risk. And, you know, obviously password managers are great. You know, if people aren't familiar with those, it's kind of an application that you have that stores all your passwords in a secure way. And then you have kind of one master password to kind of manage all those different passwords. For some reason, people just have trouble adopting that, you know, and overall. So I think it's important, you know, to really focus on what your passwords are protecting. And so while we certainly want to see people use strong passwords for everything, at least for the most important things in your life, right? Your bank accounts, your email accounts, you know, which can oftentimes be kind of the keystone of the rest of your accounts for resetting things. Make sure you're using strong passwords for those important services. And, you know, we push passphrases too, right? So just, you know, having an easy to remember phrase for you that's hard to guess. And then really making sure that you're using multi-factor authentication is essential as well. So people are usually pretty familiar with that from the codes that are emailed to your phone or texted to your phone that you kind of then enter into the website. Or there are certain, you know, applications on your phone for more security that kind of allow that multi-factor. But I think it is tough. I mean, we probably, you know, if you've been on the internet for a long time, you probably have hundreds of passwords, and it's really tough to manage, and probably stuff floating out there from 20 years ago that we don't even remember having.
So is there a way, let me take a break and we'll pick it up when we come back. Because what I'm thinking of doing here, and it might be overly dramatic, is just dropping out of society and getting off the grid for like 10 years. And then coming back and reestablishing an identity and starting all over with the passwords. Maybe I don't have to go that far. I don't know, but we'll talk about it. If you have any questions about internet security, Alex Hammerstone is our go-to guy and has been for a long time. And Alex, by the way, we do appreciate your time. We really do. Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec 919. Taking a break. Coming back. Tommy Tucker, WWL. 925, talking to Alex Hammerstone, our good friend, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec, about internet security and scams that are out there, the latest being the toll scam. You got unpaid tolls and blah, 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 blah. Alex, we really do appreciate your time. I wanted to tell you that because you don't get paid for this, and you give us a lot of information. You help a lot of people, and we appreciate you for it.
Oh, I love doing it. It's an honor to be included.
So, and I'm sorry about the comment about your mom earlier. I was just kidding. No, but seriously.
She does drive.
There you go. Once again, let's talk about my password thing, because the power went out yesterday, for example. The power goes out for 2 hours, which means the computer shuts down cold, right? And then it comes up. I turn the Mac on, and it comes up, and I got to put in my Apple user password or whatever the hell it asked me for. I got one that is two numbers and a word. I got another one that has something to do with Apple and apps that is the word, same word, and two numbers. All of this is so terribly confusing to me, and I'm getting a lot of texts that are agreeing with me. How can I reset all of this in one fell swoop? Can I?
So you can't in one fell swoop. That's kind of the challenge.
I cannot.
It would be nice if there were. No, there's not really a way to do that. It really does involve, you know, logging into most of these accounts individually and changing the password. So I think that's one of the challenges. And you kind of end up with, we're all kind of digital pack rats, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you just end up with these accounts that, again, they're probably 15 years old, right, for some site or service we used back then. And, you know, we might not have had the kind of same, you know, knowledge of information security back then, and they might be weak passwords. And so that's a concern as well, kind of these, I guess, zombie accounts, right, that we just don't even think about anymore.
So what would your advice be to try to start over or press the reset button? How would we begin to do this?
So the first rule of getting out of a hole is to stop digging, right? So I think, you know, so kind of pick a cutoff point and make sure that any new accounts were using strong passwords, and kind of making sure that those are appropriate. And then I think really focusing on the most important accounts. So, you know, do we want to have, you know, some 20-year-old, you know, sports account, you know, have a weak password? Of course not. But I'd rather people focus on, you know, looking at their current bank account password or their current email account password, things like that, and really focusing on those things that are most important and going from there. And then kind of just as they come up, right, if you're able to get rid of these accounts, you know, if you're bored one day, go through your email account and look for certain keywords like, you know, new account or thank you for signing up. And you can find a lot of your old accounts that way. And then maybe start logging into those and trying to reset or get rid of those accounts could be helpful as well. There's just not a one fell swoop way to do it.
Somebody texted in about DuckDuckGo saying they're having a hard time canceling it. They don't know what the password is, and it's a long text here. I'm trying to get through it, and they can't find it. Is there a number to call or something, you know, when it comes to these apps or browser sites or whatever?
So these days, customer service is what it is, and it's extremely difficult to get somebody on the phone. You know, even for some of these major companies, and it's tough to get someone on the phone. And if you're lucky enough to kind of even find a phone number, you might go through a long menu. But unfortunately, the days where we can kind of just call a lot of different companies and ask for help are kind of behind us. It's extremely difficult to get someone on the phone in most cases.
Can you do it through your credit card, maybe, if they're charging a credit card? Or is it through an app? I don't know what this person's doing.
So if you're being charged for something and are not able to cancel it, it's oftentimes a good way, you know, to reach out to your credit card company. They can help you. Mm-hmm. If nothing else, you know, that will cause the organization or the company that's charging you to reach out to you, right, when they see that you kind of decline that charge. It really varies based on the credit card and you know, how much kind of protection you have or how much they'll help you with that. But oftentimes, yes, if you kind of deny that charge, it can be helpful. One of the challenges, though, is it used to be that if you canceled your credit card and got a new number, it would kind of force all those old services to stop working. Mm-hmm. But these days, oftentimes they're able to keep charging you, even when you get a new credit card.
Could be that pesky end user agreement that nobody reads?
It's pretty commonly somewhere in there. So that is a tough one.
Somebody texted in, is the password manager in the Google Chrome browser okay to use?
So every answer is going to be somewhat qualified, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if it's an extension from Google, right, or if you're looking at kind of the iCloud, if you're an Apple user, they're always going to be better than nothing, right, or almost always. And generally, yes, for the average user, those are a pretty safe place to store your passwords.
Somebody texted in and said password managers can make it easier to change your password. You log in, click on your, say, Yahoo account to change your password. It'll let you change your password right there or take you to the Yahoo site to change the password. I just read about three different websites, it seems like, and I can imagine somebody like myself who is barely computer literate clicking all over the place and then saying screw it and getting up and walking out.
Sure. So the password manager can make it easier or streamline it a bit, but it's still not one fell swoop, right? I mean, it still is going to require you to log into a number of these sites. And then, of course, you go to log in and you've forgotten your password. So then you've got to, ask it to reset your password. But then it's some email address you haven't used for 10 years to get the password reset. And it can become very complicated and honestly annoying pretty quickly.
Somebody texted in, and this has been my experience as well sometimes, where, and matter of fact, when I was trying to get the pass, the toll thing, they sent me a confirmation email and it automatically went to spam, which I didn't see, which led me to go back and ask them, where's the email, and blah, 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 blah. And, of course, you never talk to a person. It's either email or AI, whatever the hell it is. Somebody wants to know how, and I'll ask you as well for me, how do you manage that to keep whatever going communication that you need from going to spam, yet so much garbage comes through?
So it's interesting, I look at my spam folder probably once a week just to check it and see if I missed anything. I'm really militant about unsubscribing, right? So I've really gotten it down to where I don't get a ton of email on my personal account anymore, because anything I don't want, I just unsubscribe.
But it's so hard to do that, Alex. Take me through that process to unsubscribe, because you got to look for the little bitty tiny print, right, and then go through 15 confirmations that you want to?
So if you're using, let's just say, Gmail or one of those sites, it'll oftentimes have an unsubscribe link right at the top, right, as part of the Gmail service. Mm-hmm. And so that can be helpful. Other times you can click that unsubscribe link all day and it won't do anything. But a reputable site, if you click unsubscribes, should stop sending you email. But really, it's just, I think all these things are, it's just how complicated it is, right, and how many different companies and services we use, and just how confusing it gets so rapidly.
You mentioned, what did you say? I forgot exactly how you phrased it about rat packs, pack rats, rather. What did you say?
Digital pack rats.
Yeah. how can you try to avoid that? Is it like almost cooking where you clean as you go to avoid all of that building up on you?
A lot of it is clean as you go, right? So I think that, when we get an email, we open it up, we read it, and now it no longer is kind of listed as an unread email, and then it just sits there forever. And the only time people tend to clean up their email is when they start running out of storage. So I think that, once in a while, maybe it's like spring cleaning, right? Every year, or maybe when the time changes, commit to going through your email account that probably has thousands and thousands of emails, and just deleting everything you don't need. I think people just save stuff. The other thing is you can't lose what you don't have, right? And so what you don't want to happen is if your email, God forbid, gets broken into, that you have all these emails in there with account numbers or things that you should have deleted. So it's really getting rid of it can be really a cleansing experience. So.
Man, I got to tell you, I probably got on the AT&T email that I have, I think through Yahoo, I don't know, but I probably got about 20,000 emails that I got to go in there, but I don't even know how that would, I'd have to take a week off. Somebody texted in, what about the keychain? Mine's hanging on a refrigerator on a hook, but I don't think that's what they're referring to.
So they're likely referring to kind of the Apple service. And again, it's one of those things. It's like everything else. It's risk-based. But for the average user, that's going to do what you need it to. Just make sure, if you're using the keychain, that you have kind of a strong Apple password. And there are also options to turn on and enhance security features with your iCloud account and your Apple account, which people should certainly look into taking advantage of. But again, it all comes down to risk management, right? It's ease of use versus security. And just like decisions we make all day in the physical world, we have to make with our digital lives. And the same way we might not, if you go to the mailbox and there's a bunch of junk mail, you might throw it right in the trash. But if you go to the mailbox and there's an account statement, you want to shred that first, right? And so thinking that same concept with our digital lives, right, certain things just require more protection than others.
Alex, I can't thank you enough. Somebody quickly before we let you go wants to know if there's a great site where people can go and vastly improve their computer skills or learn how to manage all of this.
You know, shockingly, it's YouTube. You know, the same way if something breaks down my car, I'll oftentimes fire up YouTube and find someone that's fixed it and kind of go from there, or my furnace and I got to fix something. So YouTube has a lot of great free services. Obviously, there's a lot of garbage out there, too. But I think, you know, there's a lot of kind of reputable people out there producing content that can help us learn a lot.
Yeah, I did my own knee replacement, as a matter of fact, with YouTube. So get those. Thank you, Alex. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
Have a great day.
Alex Hammerstone, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec. We'll talk to Deuce McAllister when we come back. 9:36, 24 till 10, traffic now, WWL.
From the Acadian Windows and Hurricane Shutters WWL Traffic Center, I'm Joe Cardos. The I-55 is flowing freely as you head.
9:42, 18 till 10. Quickly to our good friend Deuce McAllister, WWL Saints color analyst, former Saints running back. Hell, y'all know who Deuce is. How you doing, Deuce?
Doing well. And yourself?
All right. Sunday afternoons aren't the same around my house without you, my friend. I got to tell you. But you'll be back, right?
I will be back. It won't be very long. I mean, we've got the draft coming up in a few weeks here, and then you'll be on to OTAs. And before you know it, just got announced that training camp will be back here in Metairie. So it'll be here quickly.
So a lot of talk going on about the Saints and, you know, the people. I already talked to reporters, Deuce, who have told me that they are under so much pressure to produce content that they'll write a story that may or may not be true, then somebody denies it, and then they write the response to that. So they got three stories made out of nothing. And that's true that I got firsthand from a reporter. Now, there are stories flying around about the Saints and quarterback and maybe Shedeur Sanders or maybe Jackson Dart trading up. Derek Carr, throw all of that into one big bunch, and one of my big Bobby Hebert questions there, and answer it for me.
Yeah, so it's a lot of fabrication right now is what you're getting. Okay. And so you have smoke and mirror season is basically where you are at this point. And a lot of times, you know, part of what you read is somewhat true and part of what you're reading and hearing is pretty much false. You have a lot of general managers, whether it's locally here and teams and agents that are trying to put themselves in the best position to get the guy that they want. And so you will see teams follow a player or two, but have no intention of drafting that player or two. And so you kind of have to watch what a team does, not only during free agency, but what their roster looks like as well. I mean, and so if you can get a path or an idea of what they've done, over their history, normally they pretty much stay with what they've done over the course of their history. Now, there may be a one-off, or, you know, maybe they do something different once or maybe twice, but nine times out of ten, if they've given you 4 to 5 years of this is the pattern, they're probably going to stay with that pattern.
Let's talk about Kellen Moore, and I would ask you to put on your jersey and helmet again. Well, actually, jersey, because not having a helmet never stopped you when you were on a field. But and as a player, what would you think of Kellen Moore as a coach? A younger guy, but seems to be an offensive genius. A new guy coming in as a player. What does he have to do with the locker room, in the locker room, and as a player? How would you react to that?
Well, if I'm playing for him, you know, one, I want to see what he's done in the past. Okay, what have your offenses done in the past? You know, whether it's my position specifically or, you know, offense in general. And so, and that's what we'll focus on this side of it, because it becomes the same defensively for Coach Staley as well, Brandon Staley, defensive coordinator. I want to see what he has done in the past. And so from that conversation, how do I fit personally? How do I fit into that equation of what he has done in the past? What do I need to kind of work on myself? What don't we have, you know, as far as offense, defense? And that kind of gives you an idea of what they're thinking a little. Now, will they accomplish all of that in year one? Probably not. You know, when you talk about drafting a player or being able to sign a player, because when you add to a team, it all doesn't happen just in free agency, at the first part of free agency, or even in a draft. I mean, that could be a situation, and I went through it myself, you know, as far as being a team member where players are added all throughout the off season. So just because the Saints haven't made a specific move yet for one position, that doesn't mean that, hey, this is the team that they're going to go into the season with. There will be a ton more moves to be able to add to and take away from it. But from a player specific, I want to know, how do I fit in that offense? How can I be a good player, a great player, and, you know, how can I be able to contribute to make sure that we're winning games? That's what I want to know.
So from what you know of Kellen Moore and evaluating the Saints' offense right now, again, you can only go by who we have now, right? How do you see thus far the offense playing out next season, or Kellen Moore most effectively using who we have?
Yeah, you need more players. I mean, there's still spots that you need to be able to add to. You know, traditionally in the past, he's been a 12 personnel. So that's two tight ends on the field, you know, one running back and two receivers. And so you like some of the pieces there, but you still need, you continue to have to add. And so whether you have your starting left guard, you've signed some guys in free agency, whether that's the answer completely, You don't know. You got to get him on the field. You got to be able to see, you know, what you have there. Do you add another big receiver to that room? You know, there's some young guys in the draft that'll be able to help you. You know, do you pull the trigger there? Do you add another running back to that room as well? You lost Jamal, so you're missing a back in that room. So do I get younger in that position as well to be able to give, you know, Al some help there? Tight end-wise, we talked about 12 personnel. Taysom's coming off an ACL injury, and so you feel really good about two of those guys, but I know I probably need to add another person, maybe even two other people to that room as far as the tight end position is concerned. And so quarterback, not saying that you have to have that answer completely with Derek, you know, not only this year, but for the next 2 to 3 years, mm-hmm. but what happens there? I mean, how does the draft board fall? Are you aggressive and you move up into the draft, you know, to be able to get into the top three, top five, whatever that may look like? Or do you sit pat and say, hey, we're not trading away the future. We want to continue to add some pieces. And, you know, we like these three players that will be available. And so all of that they've kind of written out. So, you know, if we're looking at a board, we've probably got about 7 to 8 different scenarios that could happen. And if that happens, then this is the one that we're going to roll with, because we know those three players will be there. These four players will be there out of those 7 or 8, you know, different situations. And so, you know, there's a ton. There's a ton that they still have to do to be able to improve that roster. And the draft is just one of those ways to try to get a little bit better.
Somebody texted in about schedule. I'm seeing the Saints play the Cardinals, 49ers, Patriots, Jets, Giants, Bills, Chicago Bears, Rams, Dolphins, Seahawks, and the Titans next year. And then you can even look ahead to see the 2026 and 27 opponents for the most part. But because of free agency and the way the NFL constantly changes, they want to know if looking ahead to see who you're playing affects the way you build the team. I don't know how it can. There are too many variables. Thoughts?
No. Yeah, no, it doesn't. I mean, I think, you know, you want to be able to obviously put your system in, but you can't be so stubborn to say, hey, my system is 3-4. Mm-hmm. I'm going to run a 3-4 defense regardless. And if you don't have 3-4 personnel, You can't be that stubborn. I may be able to introduce it a little bit, but I may not be able to fully implement it until 2 years. I mean, just because I don't have that personnel. And so that's one of the things I was referencing to earlier, you know, just like from a 12 personnel standpoint. Yeah, it's a lot easier to get to 12, but maybe I have better receivers than I do, you know, tight ends. And so I may go 11 a lot more instead of 12 personnel, and that's three receivers on the field. And so it's just being able to say, hey, look, this is who I want to be as far as from a scheme standpoint, but I don't have that personnel, so I can't be that fully. It may take me 2 years to be able to get to that scheme fully just because I don't have that personnel. And so I'm not going to change totally from a system just because of an opponent that we play.
So if Derek Carr, if this is his last year as a Saint, and I'm presuming that would be the case, you think?
I wouldn't assume that.
No, okay.
I mean,
all right.
I wouldn't necessarily assume that. I think they're going to see how the year plays out, and you know, if
that's
if,
what I was going to get to, Deuce, coach, with how the year plays out. At what point? Go ahead. You know where I'm going with that.
No. And so I think a lot of it depends.
A lot of it depends what, Deuce? You cut out. I got to know what it depends on. Maybe you got a call. Deuce, you there? All right. Let me take a break. Maybe we can find out when we come back. A lot of it depends on. That's like a cliffhanger. We got to find out. A lot of it depends on what? Hopefully we can find out with Deuce when we come back on WWL. Oh, Deuce, he is back? Deuce, a lot of it depends on what?
Well, how you play. He plays, how the team plays. You know, are you improving? Are you still bad? You know, all of that goes into consideration.
Gotcha. Thank you, Deuce. A pleasure as always, my friend. Can't wait to hear you again on Sunday afternoons. Deuce McAllister, WWL's, you know who he is, I don't have to tell you. 9:53 now. We'll take a break, find out what Newell's got when we come back on WWL.